Greetings, salutations, jingle bells, jingle bells.
Stop, copyright, it's copyright violation. You can't sing any more of that song, Tony.
Oh my goodness. All right, well, let's get Frosty the Snowman. Welcome to the Agile Revolution. I'm Tony.
Hi, Renee, still medicated and drugged up.
Just the way we like it.
And I'm Craig, dealing with it as per usual.
Now,
so what's your drug of choice?
A whole pile of triple. I texted you what it was. It was some weirdo.
Is it a blue pill? That's all I want to know.
No,
it's a brown pill.
It's not Rohypnol either, so we're all good.
We're in a room where there is no background noise, no clinking, no coffee cups, no buses passing through. This is fantastic. Stop making noises!
Oh, look at that VU meter jump.
So what's new in the world, guys?
New in the world, well, it's kind of December and it's rounding out the year time. So, you know, the tradition usually is for most podcasts to do a bit of an end of year wrap up, and we're not like most normal podcasts, so we're going to do an end of year wrap up. Hang on a second.
I'm prepared for an end of year wrap up.
Well, you're all yowled and wrapped up now from yow and looking chipper. Well, you're slightly chipper. Shall we move on, Renee?
Please do.
What's new, Renee? What have you got? What have you got new?
I've got lots of stuff. Again, we haven't actually done a proper podcast for a while because of so much stuff coming through. There's a plethora of interesting blogs and stuff that has come up over the last couple of months. So one of them is around punctuated equilibriums, containers, and all things complexity and how Kanban fits in by Yuval Europe. Link will be in the show notes. And it was just a really nice way of explaining Kanban. It was just friendly. It was a different viewpoint that I've ever looked at. So some of the comments...
you mean it wasn't a forced Kanban down your throat? Yeah, it's the world's greatest thing since sliced bread, type of post.
There was always a little bit of that. And I think there always will be from someone talking about Kanban. I haven't seen many anti-Kanban posts. Maybe if people could send me some. I'd like to take the other side of the fence and actually see what that looks like. But
I'm not anti-Kanban, but I think that, as Craig said, it's not the best thing since sliced bread. It's not the be-all, the end-all. It's just another tool in your toolkit.
Not even that. I just get... and it's the same for Scrum. So before you send all those angry letters, right, it's just every post I've read lately about it is kind of like almost, you know, someone's having a second coming. You know, it's like, oh, my God, this thing is awesome and everybody should stop what they're doing. And even this morning I read ones, you know, now people are saying, I think I should stop teaching all my teams Scrum and stuff.
I read that this morning myself. Do Kanban before you do Scrum.
Yeah, and it's like, hang on a second, that's not the point, right? Pick the thing that was right for purpose and then do that.
Exactly.
Hello, let's teach them the basics of Agile first, whether it be Scrum, Crystal, whatever it be, then use the other tools.
Actually, I'd say ask people how they work.
Why would we do that?
Yeah. Ask them about what their current problems are.
Whoa.
What do you think this is? Collaboration Central?
Yeah, so I'm not recommending just carte blanche going in and saying use this. I say have discussions, work out what the problem is, and use the appropriate tool. Anyway, going on to this post, so some comments that I found just really insightful. You are inspecting and adapting both the product and the process. A lot of people don't get that, and that goes across Agile as a whole. You're inspecting and adapting both the product and the process.
Yeah, I mean everybody, you know, what really my pet peeve from my pet peeve of the year.
Oh, right? Hello. Step back, Renee.
Yeah, soapbox. My pet peeve of the year is, you know, Agile. I'm using the Agile methodology. Right? Yep. Agile methodology. It's like, no, right? Then you got it wrong. And that's the process thing, right? Is people saying we're gonna pick a process.
You said that word.
Got the M word.
Methodology. I'm really sorry. Yeah, you got my pet peeve. Wait up. I get the soapbox now. There goes the VU meter. It loves it when we make a bang. I cannot stand when people say, I'm using the Agile methodology. People, it's not a goddamn methodology. Seriously. Do you agree with me?
Comments of Tony are not necessarily those of the Agile to Revolution podcast.
If you take a single of the methods, by itself, such as Scrum or Kanban, or then no, it's not a methodology.
Yeah, thank you.
But if you have something that wraps them all together...
It's a framework.
Yeah.
It's a framework. You know why I don't like methodology?
Yeah.
Because the very word methodology, if you actually look up, is prescriptive.
That's right. And
that's
so
what... It's
you have a methodology when you take Agile, Kanban, Scrum, whatever it is, and then apply it into your way of working. And if anyone starts drawing diagrams or process flow diagrams or, you know, putting instructions up on a wall, then you're starting to get a methodology.
Yeah. Hey, let's get the hell out of here.
Okay, moving on. He also says that Scrum has a safety zone. For example, during a Scrum sprint, the backlog does not shift. Or on Ken Schwab's terminology, a container. Kanban provides this safety zone by not touching work that is currently in progress. So what is pulled next can be adjusted, but once you've pulled it, it can't be adjusted inside. It talks about, you know, expedited items and the limits the occurrence of these and how the process exists in order to limit them. And says that Kanban helps you see dysfunctions. You can't see a good playbook that says that this practice will get you out of this particular mess. So it's saying it's not prescriptive. You get a category of practices, ideas that you might want to try out and see if they're a step in the right direction. And it talks about the container being business value or a story. It sort of asks people to comment on whether the container or whatever you're working in is actually a business value increment or a story. So anyway, there's a great post. Well worth a read.
Cool. The one I came across, there's been a lot of talk about continuous deployment, and a lot of people know the Flickr example, you know, rolling out to production every 30 minutes. But there was a post by Luke Roblewski on the Luke W blog, and apparently he was at the Warm Gun Conference in San Francisco a couple of weeks ago, and there was someone from Etsy giving a presentation, and he gave a good wrap up. So Etsy, if you don't know, it's that craft where you sell your crafts online. It's a really good site and a good just thing to look at for, you know, lots of different ideas, particularly if you're designing sites or whatever. It's a big site. It gets 1.4 billion page views a month. It generates $600 million sales a year. So 140 people working on the site. So it's not a small site. Anyway, the point of the article is that they continuously do continuous deployment. They push code to production, right? Take a guess how many times a day.
Ooh.
Once an hour. 50 to 60 times a day.
Yeah, I was just doing calcs.
50, that's a lot of times a day, right? Mm-hmm. So essentially the smallest little increment gets pushed out. And what they found was that, you know, sounds really, really simple, but the changes are small, right? Which means the bug fixes are small. Easy to fix, easy to roll them in, easy to roll them out, right? None of these, you know, big things, you know, going through stuff. The other thing is that a lot of the changes aren't just code, right? The changes are content changes, but everybody goes through the same cycle. Everybody uses the version control system. Everybody, you know, goes through the continuous deployment process, right? So everybody is responsible for deploying code. So if you're a designer, right, you deploy code. If you're a product manager and you want to put out something new on the site, you deploy code, right? So everybody's in that same loop. So everybody understands what the, you know, what the process is. It's not this kind of us and them approach with the engineers versus everybody else. So everybody has to understand how it works, and they're all part of the whole development process, which means the whole company moves around this continuous deployment, which kind of goes back to, again, what you're talking about, is it's not just the process, it's the design as well. So it's good. We'll put the article in the show notes, but lots of just little tips in that article, and it's really good.
So how many end users do they have? Sorry, what was that number?
1.4 billion page views a month.
Right. So. But they don't have, I guess, to try and compare it to a system that you deploy where people have to be trained in it, for example.
Hmm. It's like a Facebook or more like an eBay, I guess, is the kind of site it's like. So bear in mind, 50 to 60 times a day is not massive changes. I mean, they're only small little changes, right? It could be move button from, you know, from left side of the screen to right side of the screen, or it could just be someone spelt something wrong and we've applied an update. They're the kinds of things that are going out there. But the site is constantly going live, but at any one time they can roll it forward, roll it back, know exactly what it is. There's not live edits happening to the site. They're actually pushed through in a continuous deployment cycle.
But does that suggest that their MMFs are very, very small?
Yes. Yeah, well, there's actually no such thing as an MMF, right?
Mm.
When you make a change to code, it goes live, and you know, it doesn't really say in this article that I can just flipping back through here whether they use things like feature toggles or any of those.
Yeah, what they're going to do with that, because if you're not doing that, you're going to have some method of prioritizing it, right?
Yeah, so. You know, like it does say in here, for example, that they don't branch code at all. Instead, they branch things inside of code so only certain people can see things. Here we go. And these conflict flags are also used for on off, dev prod, whitelist, company all, and A/B test cells.
Yeah. That's a testament to them because, you know, as you did, Craig, having worked in the online quite a lot, the minute you start branching, that becomes a very, very governance heavy process. You've got to be really careful about what you do. And if you've got multiple branches running, so that is a testament that they can ship and shape so quickly.
Hmm. And they even talk about, you know, they do commit and code reviews to prevent people from launching mistakes, right? And it's like a big misnomer that, you know, we do agile and all of a sudden the code reviews of the past have gone the way of the dinosaur. I mean, I'm glad that the 3-hour code review meetings aren't around anymore. I remember you used to sweat to walk into a room and someone review your code and pick up every last little, you know, like that.
You know what's also funny about those days is that everyone used to come in with like a wad of 100 pieces of paper.
Yeah. Yeah. And usually they hadn't read it. And
what was the reality of the outcome at the end?
Well, the reality is you still deployed, yeah.
We missed a lot more stuff than
we did. Or you just deployed. Everyone went, you know, you should have written that function like that. You know, you're a bit silly, but hey, we'll deploy it anyway. Right? Yeah. So, again, everything in the small makes it a lot easier. Yeah.
And the reality was Craig's code, so, you know.
That was crap.
I'm not invested, so I don't care.
Yeah, I don't know. I think you shouldn't throw stones at glass houses, Mr. Ponton.
You know what? Hopefully anything that I've written over the years is gone by now.
Well, and truly for me. What about you? Have you got anything interesting?
I've got one that it's an interesting post from the point of view that it got me both. It had some good points and it had some bad points in it. So, and it was, where is the proof that Agile works?
Sounds like a great question.
On agilemodeling.com, yeah. I think, unfortunately, one of the first things he did was get me offside because he started with the software development methodologies, Agile are new, and he started down saying that they were methodology. So you've already heard my rant on that.
Okay, moving on, yes.
But moving on, and I think he asked some good questions in there. There's a whole big chunk at the beginning about why we should do this, but I think he really does zone it down in one little final statement. Says, if you don't give people the answers, they fill the blanks in themselves and often get it wrong, right? So that when you first tried to implement Agile, or you're trying to put Agile into a project, people say, well, prove it to me that this thing works on worldwide scale, prove it to me that it works. And the point he's making at the moment is that there's not a lot of good metrics around because people aren't gathering metrics, and Craig, it's part of your old iron hand bugbear that you love to get on. You know, if you measure it, things get fixed, things get done, and a lot of people aren't measuring and doing a lot of good metrics at the moment, so he's calling for the fact that people really need to do that.
I agree completely. Yeah
Then the second part of it sort of heads off into the old agile crossing the agile chasm, which is not a new concept. And then he says, you know, I believe the expectations of people requiring proof aren't realistic. Well, see, there's two sides of the argument for me there. So I'm sitting there going, well, on one hand you're saying, well, we need to give proof, and on the other hand you're saying realistically, I think I get what he's saying. Is the point being is that people are focusing too much on prove it to me and not just let's try it if I read it properly. So I had to read it a couple of times, so it's probably really worthwhile having a read and see what you think, and I'll give it to you for the
show notes. Yep.
Show notes. Certainly got me thinking. If he did nothing else, he really got me thinking about, well, what do I do if that actually comes out? Because I'm sure both of you have had that happen before.
Oh, yeah, I generally refer to, I think, Raleigh and Scott Ambler's work where they have done a number of metrics and surveys, so there is some evidence out there of information about where it is valuable and why it's valuable. Yeah. And it does surprise you if you actually go through it. You go, you know, the areas of predominant value is in the ability to adapt and the empowerment that teams have and the satisfaction that teams have.
Yeah, he does break it down further down, which is interesting. I think it's one of the statements. It may not be clear what actually needs to be proved regarding agile software development. So what he's saying there is, you know, what do they really want us to prove? And the other part of it is, what are the motivations of the people asking for the proof? So I guess it's that old, show me the proof so I can debunk it so I don't have to do it.
Mm.
Well, it's more that, no, I mean, it's not that, so you can debunk it, but if you're going to do change, you'd need to sort of know why you're driving towards that change. It's sort of, it's very fundamental.
I think it's the other way around. I think most of the people that want to debunk it either don't believe they need change or are too scared of change. Right, it's you know.
But if we don't give them proof or any sort of reason why to change, then they could continue to want to debunk it.
Yeah, sure. But is it our job as you know, people who come in to do agile transformations? Our job is not to always
to sell. I think it is.
Well, you just can't go into walking into any old company off
you
the street.
You can't cold sell. No.
Yeah. So the company has to have wanted to change in the first place, right? So usually our job is someone's already come in and went, we need to do this better, and that's your step in the door.
But that one person doesn't represent the whole company.
True, but at least there's at least a sponsor there, right? There has to be a sponsor somewhere in it. So when we started our agile journeys, we were that person, right? Right, quite often we were the person that wanted to start the journey, right? As you know, as we're
but
agile
at the end
coaches,
of the day, you're transitioning people that don't want to change.
True.
So you have to sell it.
True, you have to at least.
What's in it for them?
You have to educate them about what they're doing now is driving this change.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I take your point about not being a cold call, but I do think sometimes you still have to spread the word. It's a little bit like a disease.
Spread the cult? Slaughter the chicken?
You've got to start. My God. Okay, any more? Let's throw it.
Yeah, taser the turkey, maybe? Pop the ham?
Yeah. Oh, Christmas all in one go. Oh.
Drink the nog.
Sorry, went too far. That, the pause there went too far. I think the bottom line with it is it's there's a difference between selling and promoting, for me. So selling, you know, is when somebody's smashing you down, trying to promoting is when you're just putting the word out there and letting people make that decision for themselves. So I don't know. That's just my take on it.
Although still when you promote, people still are usually turning up to hear what you have to say, right? So.
Yeah. People turn up to hear what you have to say, not the other way around.
People being forced to turn up.
Yeah. That's right.
So, Craig, I think what do I drive it back to? It's a really good point in one of the training courses, and I've stolen it from you, so I'm happy to say that, is one of the training courses that you deliver, you often say to people, why are you here?
Mm.
Yeah? And the example you give is, you know, I've had training courses where people have actually been sent there and just turned up and said, my boss told me to go. Right?
Yeah.
And your answer to that is, well, you probably shouldn't be here. You need to go back to where you came from, because this is not going to be a benefit to you. So that's the difference for me.
So I'm going to challenge this to say, I think we, as coaches, should be better salespeople. We all know that this is valuable. We all know that this is a better path to go down than current waterfall methodologies. We should be selling it.
Mm. I can see your point, but you know, there's so many people crying out for change in the world, right? We're not here to change every company, every person, right? It's the
no,
company.
No, we should be changing the world. No, that's a revolution.
No, I think you need.
You're
change.
In the club.
You need to
get
change.
Out.
You need to change the. Don't push me out of the door. Let me get back to the microphone. It's like anything, right? The strongest will survive. And I don't, you know, if, you know, I'm not going to insert the names of companies here, but there's, you know, lots of multinationals and large companies in, you know, all over the world, right? They're past, you know, a lot of times the, you know, the ability to change, right? So
yep.
For my mind, that's where I want to send the people that don't want to change, right? We actually need those companies for the,
to die.
You know, yeah, to for people who don't want to change, because ultimately they will die out, or they'll realise the way, and that's the way that most of them are happening. So, yes, it's a revolution, but I want to revolutionise industries and organisations that actually want to do something better. Right?
Yeah.
I've got, my life is too short to change companies that
can't be bothered.
That can't be bothered with the change.
Yeah.
And I think that goes back to, and I'm going to steal this from Lean. There's a lovely little phrase that I've picked up along my journey, and I apply it to Agile as well, right? Agile is not something that you have done to you. Agile is something that you have to actually do to yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah? And that, in a nutshell, whether it be waterfall, whether it be lean, whether it be agile, whether it be any of those types
any
of
change,
culture
yeah.
change,
yeah.
that's the bottom line.
Yeah. And for it to be successful, people have to want to change.
Right? Exactly right.
So moving on.
Wow, we got deep there for a while, didn't we?
Can I
finish one thing with my post?
Go.
There's some really good metrics in there, albeit some of them are a little bit aged in the tooth, but probably worth having a look at about project success
rates. Yeah,
there.
Yeah,
he's brought together a whole bunch of them. So okay. They're all in a good little group if you were looking for some stuff to pull together okay. at any stage. Right.
So in a very similar sort of... category. One of my favourite bloggers is Jordan Bortz. He has a software architecture blog. Have either of you ever read it?
The name rings a bell.
Yeah, so his website is jordanbortz.wordpress.com and will be a link in the show notes. What I like about his...
Hang on, what are you doing reading software development?
Hush. What I love about his posts is that it's very challenging. So it's similar to the one that you've just described. He likes to challenge and he's had a couple of posts which are almost rant-like, almost similar to my own blogs.
Oh, you don't rant, Renee?
Not much. One of his interesting ones is around, is the Agile community still uncovering better ways of developing software or just debating on whether to implement Scrum or Kanban?
So, just before you go through, what do we just think to that question before we say what he had to say? So, Tony, what do you think?
Well, you know what I think? I think that...
Time's up, Renee.
No, well, I can't just pull that out of the side of my head like you do. You know, I have to think that through. But I think for me that he's got too swept up in the emotion, hasn't got analytical.
But are we discovering new things, or are we just polishing the?
I think we're discovering new things. I think we're discovering new things every day. That's why I said I think he's got too swept up in the emotion of it, not into the analytical of it.
So what do you think, Renee?
I think there's a bit of both. I think certainly we are discovering new things. DevOps, lean startup is clear examples of where we are discovering new areas, new facets. Though I do think we are spending too much time in the Scrum XP. Scrum Kanban war.
I think there's actually more than that. I think there's almost two sets of people. It's almost people get this epiphany. So I look at some of the people in the.
There's a phone. And apologies to the phone.
Has that pizza turned up? Is that pizza turning up there, Tony?
Yes, I'll have one with anchovies. Thank you. What? You're out of anchovies? I don't want it!
Oh, dear.
Tony Ponton. Yeah, look, this is actually a meeting room up in so I'm not really sure why it's coming to here. Sorry. Sorry. All right, cheers, bye.
Oh dear.
And double anchovies as well. Anyway, let's keep going.
So where was I going? I was just about to say, I think there's some people, some very smart people who have invented some or found some really good things in our community, and I think then they get stuck on that. Right, and I think even the whole Kanban Scrum rant we talked about a couple of episodes is an awesome example of that. There's some very very smart people in the Kanban community, yet they haven't looked past Kanban. The Scrum guys, some of those guys are in exactly the same boat, right? Yeah. So it's almost like if you have that epiphany and you find something, like there's a whole bunch of people in our community who peddle the same thing they've been peddling for the last 10 years.
Isn't that evolution in general?
Well, they're stuck in a rut.
So it usually comes along. So my thought about that, Craig, is it takes a disruptive force to shock things out of us. So let's just use a phone analogy just quickly, right?
Well, like a phone rings in the middle of a podcast, you mean?
In a podcast, but you think about the phone industry a few years ago, stuck in a rut, same old thing, one particular supplier, away it goes, and it's been peddling the same type of thing, right? Along comes a disruptive force. Which in this instance, it's Apple,
right,
with their iPhone, which just breaks the industry open. This particular supplier is sitting there thinking, well, we'll just keep doing what I'm doing because this has always been the best way that we've done it. XP, Scrum, whatever it might be, right? But eventually, they've had to change their ways and get on the bandwagon. So it's evolved. And I see, yeah,
but,
I see it much
but
like that.
I'll counter your argument, right? And to use a similar example, let's look at the gaming consoles, right?
Right.
Is that, you know, Sony and Microsoft bring out the
it's
Xbox...
So
yeah, they bring out the same. We didn't know they do not advertise on this show. They bring out their two consoles, right? Nintendo comes out with the Wii, right? Revolutionary, right? You can play tennis like you're playing tennis and all that kind of stuff, right? And sells a bucket load, right? The console itself is not very, you know, doesn't have good home HD quality, all the rest of it. So what does Sony do? Sony goes, uh-oh, we need to be in that market. It takes 2 years to bring out something called the Move, which is a pretty average product,
it's
right?
It's very average.
Right? Now Nintendo is losing sales hand over foot because they've come up with nothing since the Wii. They haven't updated any of the architecture. The Nintendo DS is on its 17th incarnation, right? Microsoft was a disruptor when they went, we're not going to go and copy the Wii. We're going to come out with Kinect, which is something different. It's the same with the phone. Everybody went, iPhone's got apps. Guess what we're going to have? Apps, right?
Yeah, I get you.
So it's you know, copying even is not the is not the right thing. People think that's the way to innovation, and it's not. Sermon over. Off my soapbox.
We've had a lot of soapboxes here today. Poor Renee, she's been on the end of us.
Anyway, Renee.
Anyway, it makes a change for us.
So a couple of things that Jordan's saying.
Yeah, so what did Jordan think? Because we
sorry, Jordan, what do you think?
Is that he's saying it's not just the signatories when we say we, so he's actually saying the Agile community needs to step up.
Which was very clear at the 10th anniversary that, you know, a number of the signatories were very clear in Salt Lake City in saying that.
Yeah, and they've been very clear about that it needs to go to the next level we need to look for.
If they really felt that they should have updated the manifesto, but let me get off my soapbox for that one.
the trouble with trying to do that is you've got to get them all actually in that room again.
No, the problem is there should be new founders, knowledge founders.
And the problem is updating the manifesto is just the Wii to the Move example. It's just updating the same thing, right? What it needs is someone to come up with the next Agile manifesto, whatever it is.
Agreed.
Right. And it shouldn't be called, you're onto something. The Raccoon Injunction. There you go. I'm patenting that right now. See you guys.
But the other thing is around that it's not just about uncovering better ways. It's also future possibilities. And again, this comes back to the Oath of Non-Allegiance. Where I found this post amazingly interesting is where it talks about these new things coming in, such as Kanban and being based upon 30-year-old concepts from the Japanese business, and then it talks about the Japanese economy and have these concepts really helped Japan in the long run. Now, I'd ask you this question as a lean expert.
Ooh.
Expert.
I like the way you put that word.
Tony.
Yes.
How much of Japan uses lean and lean-like concepts?
Yeah, look,
In the industry,
I think it's again, it's very much like Agile, right? It's adopted by certain pockets. There are other pockets that don't.
So what's the percentage?
I don't know the percentage off the top of my head. I wouldn't profess to.
Right.
It would be silly of me to try to come up with that. Because the other thing with that is it's a very guarded industry as well, right? So
yeah,
a lot of them aren't going to tell you what they're actually doing. Toyota was very innovative in the fact that they threw open their doors to everyone.
Yeah.
A lot of the other companies aren't going to do that, but it is suffice to say they obviously stood up, took notice, and copied.
Yeah.
But it wasn't just the process, right? You know, they did the old story of, was it Ford or GM who went to visit one of the plants and went, we need to do exactly that, tried to copy it, and fell flat on their face.
And the reason for that is in Chasing the Rabbit or the High Velocity Edge, Stephen Spears actually tells you that, you know, at the time, I think that's what it was, it might have been Toyota DNA, I can't remember, but basically he tells you at the time he was there when they were actually, because he actually went and worked on the lines. That's how he actually did it. And he spoke to, you know, the director at the time and said, why do you let these guys come in and take that stuff? And they said they can only see what they can see. They can't see the culture unless they're actually in it.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah? And that's the whole reality of it.
So Jordan's post is really saying the Japanese economy right now is pretty screwed. It is. It's like one of the lowest.
Lower than the rest of the world, baby.
No, it's not actually. So this is where it's really quite interesting. Number one country in the world, economy-wise, China. Number two, Korea, and then Australia.
Yeah, but I also read a lot of information on that recently, which says that's probably an overinflated figure because a lot of the economist figures on that based on China is because of the sheer number and sheer mass, and also probably aren't correct because they tell you what you don't want you to know.
So what he's saying is maybe we shouldn't be looking towards an economy that's failing for our ideas of innovation of how to change agile. Maybe we should be looking towards China and Korea and what they're doing and saying, well, what are they doing that's working really well and what can we take into our business environment?
Well, yeah, I think that's just common sense anyway. I mean, you know, yes, we took some lean concepts and we took Kanban from, you know, from that area. But I think the innovation in Kanban and lean has come from the people that have actually come out of that system. I mean, the Toyota production system is still fairly much like it was however many
TPS
years ago,
is still
right?
TPS, and TPS works because it works for that environment.
That's it. So the innovations in, you know, in lean, if you look at Kanban in software development, right, didn't really come out of Japan. It was because somebody had seen this idea and adapted it and, you know, and kind of found ways to make it work. So.
Well, it's really Deming. You know, Deming really was the architect of that work in Japan and then took it back.
Hmm.
And it's evolved ever since. Hmm. So, I mean, you know, there's some really great contributors in the software like Poppendex and those sorts of people who really made inroads and taking those concepts and applying them to service base rather than manufacturing basis. So
the last comment that I wanted to make is that Jordan has for a while been asking for people to post their Scrum success stories on his website. He's had no responses after several months. So if you do have a Scrum success story, please, by all means, prove him wrong. Go on the site, post yours up.
Yeah, we'd like to see that too so we can understand how it was successful, and that's not being smart.
One of the reasons he hasn't had any responses is he's got really quite restrictive constraints around it. So
can I go back to one whole point around that really all gels together for me when we're talking about that in the Oath of Non-Allegiance, right? So
yeah,
so
yeah,
that's, you know,
exactly.
For
exactly
me, that's
it.
Really it, you know, let's take the best of everything from anywhere regardless of its credo and use it.
And
fit for purpose.
Yeah, and the best idea, right, is going to come from somewhere we weren't expecting. Right? Who would have thought that a good idea would have come from car manufacturing? Who would have thought that great ideas would have come from phone manufacturers? Like,
from Renee.
Well, I'm not sure I've seen a great idea from Renee.
Yeah.
I've seen some good ideas.
Yeah, Merry Christmas, everybody. Viva la Revolution.
Oh, come on. Oh, Craig.
We need to give Renee a Christmas hug.
Ow. Craig, put your... No, it doesn't matter.
Don't finish that sentence, Tony.
It is a secluded little booth.
All right. What else do we have? Anybody else got any articles or some quotes, perhaps?
I really have nothing for you there. It's been a bit quiet out even in the Twitter sphere, I think.
So a couple of quotes. I mean, there's been a couple of quality ones, I think, just stood out to me, you know, that I've seen, because obviously I pick up on those ones, but... Can_test on Twitter. I like this one. In TDD, the tests that you automate are not executable specs. They're executable questions based on assumptions. Think about that one for a little bit, right? You're essentially you're questioning
definitely
things on assumptions, right?
Yeah.
So they're, you know, so we talk about specification by example,
yeah,
and I still like that term, and but I think in the way of thinking about it, that's actually a nice little way of thinking of it. Ray, you got anything?
So I saw a post and then actually redirected through to a different one. It's the Thinkers 50. Have you guys heard about that?
Yes, I have heard of the Thinkers 50.
So yeah, it's the top 50 thinkers of the year. It's a great website. It lists the thinkers who are currently out there that are rated. It's got Seth Godin in it, Dan Pink as well.
Were we on there?
No, we weren't.
We'll be in the Thinkers 50 million.
I found it. I actually went through all 50, and you know, there's a page per person. It goes through what their ideas or their concepts were that actually resulted in them being on this particular website. It's actually a really great read. It's, there's some ideas that I had never thought of or had never heard of. There's some ones that I particularly hate and have seen implemented, and I just think, oh my god, this is where it came from. But what was interesting about the website was that there was a lot focused upon innovation. There was probably a good 8 or so that were thinkers in the innovation area. A lot of people thinking about the motivation, marketing and so forth. So, you know, where it was targeted at, I think, was also very interesting. There was some neuroscience related stuff in there as well. And how I got through to here was a Forbes post on the industrial age has finally run out of gas, an interview with Don Tapscott, who is one of those top 50 thinkers.
That's a good article. I've read that one.
It's a brilliant article. So what I loved about this particular post was that it was talking about where we're going in the future, and it was a collective intelligence. It was around crowdsourcing. He had this term called ideagoras, which is called social brainstorming. And it, for me, really related back to some of the agile tenets of self-empowerment and self-motivated teams, in that what he was suggesting was that you don't have a management tier for approving the work within your organisation or approving the projects within your organisation. You have this groundswell of ideas from your employees, and that the employees are the people who rank and who rate which projects should go ahead based upon the comments and the benefits model. So
management, which works really well if you've got passionate set of employees who really believe in the company, and so and if you think about it, that's how the startups happen, right?
Yeah,
the small group people, right? Try and apply that to, you know, to the big banks or the big airlines or
a government organisation where they're just they've been steeped in malaise for so long that it's become endemic.
So that's really the challenge.
Yeah.
So leaders in this particular instance, they're just there to guide and to influence and to give instructions. They're not there to choose and to go ahead. And I love this idea of social brainstorming and a collective effort of what we should be working on. He's made a comment that 40% of global motorcycle production right now is actually using this method.
But if you think about that, that comes back to, you know, even your first, the first thing we talked about the whole process, right, is that, you know, we're not just processing the technical side or the manufacturing side of the operation where, you know, we have this notion of, inverted commas here, the business, close inverted commas, right, making the decision. It's like, you know, everyone in the company owns the business, right? And, you know, all the people I'm now seeing in the community who are successful are now, you know, moving towards that idea, right? And, you know, and there's small and medium-sized companies that are doing that very well. For large companies, it's a challenge. How do you move that? And the only way you can do that in a large company is break it into, inside the company, into smaller product-focused entities.
I think also if you can do that in big companies, you have to have, at the top level, you have to have someone who puts the foot on the gas and says, we are going to do that. You have to have that buy-in.
Yep.
Like in a startup, you've got that grassroots, right? Mm. But the intrinsically the problem in big companies is you can affect the grassroots quite often. You need to affect the management because your problem is your middle management, right? Because they've always done what they've done. It's Forrest Gumping. Stupid is a stupid does, sir, and I'm not going to change it because it's a good patch.
Mm.
So you've got to crush them in between there.
Mm.
Right.
I've got one. I tagged this one. And
so Tony's been sitting there on his phone.
No. Look, it's got favourite on it. I favourited it just in case. Yeah.
Apparently, I have proof now.
Yes, you have proof now.
Yeah, if this is radio, Tony, they can't see you forcing your iPhone in front of Renee's face.
But that's good, Craig, because they can't see that you haven't got your pants on again. So,
touche, Tony, touche.
Right. So the reason I thought this was quite funny was because it actually came from Kent Beck. I bought a set of Zen flashcards and they were all blank. Sorry, I just really tickled my fancy.
Yes, I read that one this morning too. And moved on.
Then you moved on? Did that tickle your fancy? I thought that just... if it had been anyone else, it probably wouldn't have made me laugh, but the fact it was...
I got a set of Zen flashcards in my bag. They're called index cards. They don't have stories on them yet.
The more you think about it, the funnier it is, I believe.
Right, so what you're saying is Renee, who's not chuckling now, it'll be about 11 o'clock this morning and she'll be there.
Oh, dumb!
When my medication runs out.
Well, maybe when you take more.
Oh, okay.
So I guess it would be remiss of us not having a little bit of Christmas wrap-up episode. You know, are there any highlights from the year from you guys, like things that have happened inside the community, things that, you know...
Agile revolution being formed. It doesn't get much more important than that.
Sure, right? Any real ones?
Oh, obviously that too. But no, Agile Australia was a big highlight for me. You know, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
pushing the boundaries, getting to be there with the community. I'm really looking forward to next year's being there and, you know,
me too,
being there as the Agile Revolution rather than as individual people.
Yeah, that's good. I think for me, you know, I know it's going to go the fanboy thing, but actually getting the opportunity, A, to attend Alistair Coburn's training courses, which I just got so much, and B, having the opportunity, as you did, Craig, to train with him.
Mm.
That was just that was a highlight for me that I'll carry around for quite some time.
Yeah, I mean, Salt Lake City was the was the highlight. We got the podcast from Lanier, but you know, having 15 of the 17 signatories, being able to to talk to those guys and in the corridor. You know, I had two talks at the conference. It was just a real highlight. But even on a smaller note, just some of the other little things like when we're doing things like this, starting to open doors, like even at Yow that we were at just a couple of weeks ago, being able to sit down and talk to people like Joshua Kreisky and Nigel Dalton, and then Renee not leaving me the microphone, and having the chance to speak to Mary Poppendick.
Yeah,
I would like to comment that I asked twice to Craig, you sure you don't want the mic? No, I don't want the mic.
I have to go with the other highlight that we missed out on there is our outside podcasts. They've been exceptional. The cafe one, that was just amazing. The only place in the world that we could pick where we're sitting right next to a boob implant salesperson.
True, right? That's the only thing you remember out of that podcast, isn't it, Tony?
No, I remember Renee's aghast face, but that's all.
So what if the new year, guys? Like, going to the new year as Agile revolutionists, is there a kind of bit of a New Year's resolution, something new that need to take on?
Yeah, I think start writing a book.
Yes,
Agile book.
That's, we've been talking about that between the two of us.
Mm.
It really is something that I've had a passion to do for some time.
So look that in book stands in 2017.
Yeah, you know what it's like. Yeah, I think that's the same for me.
Actually, more about that, would there be a book stand in 2017?
New stand, app. But no, yeah, it's really... And pretending that somebody actually wants to read what you write.
I also have a New Year's resolution to read Craig's InfoQ articles a bit more.
No, yeah. I have a New Year's resolution not to.
Oh, okay.
And I think the other thing for me is obviously I'm working a lot in the lean space, but just... moving forward with that and really working how that integrates with our agile journeys.
Yeah, I think for me starting to realise that, again, the world around us is changing. So, we hold things like co-located teams very dear, right? The reality is that...
It's not going to happen. It's just going to get worse.
Yeah, so we need to make it feel like people are co-located and be smarter with our use of technology and be smarter with the way that we manage things. That's something, to me, that I think, as a community, we haven't done a really good job of. And the second one is estimation, right? That's something that, we need to get a better message out there. It's just been very clear to me in the second half of this year that we just still don't do a very good job of that.
Maybe it's because we're trying to do it.
I think you're right. So there's either something where we, there's more education required, and we haven't done a good enough job. Think back right to the basics, right? We go for 2 weeks. Do you want to keep going? That kind of stuff, right? Yeah. Still hasn't really fed out. People still have this notion of, things need to be done. Everyone tells me that, everything is time and cost based, which is, has just got a certain smell to it.
Well, we've been both deep, insightful and jocular today. Do we have anything else?
I have a parting thought.
Oh, hello.
So what if, when people talk about employee engagement, and we know that there's a really strong tie between engagement and leadership, right?
Yeah.
So what if rather than being asked 50 questions on engagement, you were just asked one question? Would you hire your manager?
Wow. That is food for thought.
Yeah. So I reckon I'm challenging companies.
And in fact, can I challenge you on that question? Would you hire your leader?
Oh, yes. Sorry. Leader. Thank you. What I think is really interesting about that question is that just by that one very, very important question, you could get a very good gauge about whether that leader's working or not.
Well, most people leave companies not because of pay, not because of, right, it's because, right, the leadership is not working for
them. So don't ask 50 questions about engagement, just ask that one question about your leader.
Mm. I guess the only tough thing about that question is, again, that concern that people have that, you know, in the current economy and climate, or in, you know, finding a way that people feel safe to answer that question. That in itself is probably an indicator as well. Would you feel safe to answer the question about would you fire your leader?
And a lot of people wouldn't. Yeah.
But yeah, it's a really good question.
So my thought to finish it off is, so this is Christmas, another year done.
Yes. Yeah. Don't keep going down the Lennon cycle. We'll be paying royalties to them too.
Yeah. Well, what have you done? That's stop. Think about what you've done. Think about how you can improve it. Spirit of continuous improvement.
Well, what have you delivered, right? Yeah. We're all in the delivery cycle, right? Right. None of us are here for planning and the rest of it. We all have to deliver something.
I did quite a revolution, by the way. I couldn't help myself. So.
So as a personal answer to that, apparently what I've done is micromanaged you two to actually get into a room.
And Viva, we love you for it. Every group has its strength. You just told us what the answer is.
Renee is our Scrum Master.
He is our Scrum bitch. All right.
What about you, Craig? What's your thought?
Last one.
I think I kind of summed it up there. It's really about delivery. Right? We need to get back to thinking about what are we delivering. There's so much busy work going on, right? I've always used the term value, but I actually want to move away from the value term a little bit. I think it has the wrong connotations. It's like, what have you delivered that's made a difference? That's my parting thought.
I like that.
So the likelihood of this podcast getting to you before Christmas is highly unlikely. It'll probably get to you after New Year's. So you had a Happy New Year's.
So it's a New Year's podcast. So. Happy New Year!
Okay, that was good. All right. Well,
thanks everyone for listening.
Viva the New Year Agile Revolution.
New Year Revolution.
See you.
Bye.